You are listening to the fifth episode of the Get in the Mecha podcast, the anime and comic book podcast of which we take things one arc further. I am your host Jamal today, and I present to you with something slightly different, and that's going to be an analysis of Attack on Titan 3rd Season Part 2. And specifically, we're actually going to be looking at Owen's speech. Recently, with the whole Shiganshima arc in the 3rd season, Owen actually let out one of the greatest sort of things that I've heard in a long time when it comes to the show, and I thought that it would be worth analysing. Of course, now the show's come back to a close, I will be getting the 3rd season part 1 and part 2 reviews out soon. I will try to do those in arcs, as well as the previous arcs from the 1st and 2nd season. Those reviews will come out in further episodes. Also, just to do a bit more housekeeping as we're on the topic of reviews, I'm actually also planning to do some arc analyses of Boruto, namely the Momoshiki arc, the Ao arc from the manga, and the Shin arc, so make sure you check out the previous episode. Of course, updates on Twitter as always. On the previous episode, by the way, I actually looked at Boruto and the first 100 episodes, which explains why I was doing all the housekeeping stuff on the Boruto arc analyses, which I'll be doing in the near future. But without further ado, here is the episode for this week. That is an analysis of Owen's speech. One thing I should quickly note before I start the review, and one thing I should have actually said in the intro, apologies, is that I will actually be doing an OP analysis for this season of Attack on Titan. And that's mostly because there's so many things you can take from it. And with the philosophy of Owen's speech, and you combine that with some of the contrasting imagery and sound, etc. from the OP, it creates something really, really powerful that I want to share with you guys. So that will be coming, hopefully, I say hopefully shortly, probably after the season's done, because as I'm recording this, we're on episode 7, The Basement, at the moment. When you're listening to this, it's probably done and dusted now. All the big reveals have probably already happened. But yeah, so just be aware for that. So of course, spoilers for Attack on Titan 3rd Season Part 2's Shiganshima arc. This is probably one of the biggest arcs of the show, so it would be a real bummer if you are, say, I don't know, stuck on season 1 or 2, and you're working through the series, or say you're reading the manga, and you're not up to scratch yet, or you just haven't watched the show already, and you want to watch it, and you hear this information, because this is groundbreaking stuff. So, you have been warned. Spoilers for 3rd Season Part 2, The Return of Shiganshima arc. So before getting into the exact nitty-gritty of the speech, I think it's important that we go through the context. So where are we right now of which this speech comes out? Because that is equally as important as the speech itself. It's where we are in the moment, and within all that pressure, Owen comes out with this magnificent doctrine that sort of changes, and this is going to sound exaggerated, but it changes my entire view of the show as a whole. So let's look at the context first. We're in a high-stakes battle here. We're against our biggest enemies, the biggest enemy of humanity, that is, the Titans, and notably, three Titan shifters, Berthold, Reiner, and Zeke, the Beast Titan. We're in one of the most relevant areas of the show as of yet, being Shiganshima, the hometown of our three main protagonists, Mikasa, Eren, and Armin. And now the scouts are cornered, and they're being obstructed from probably pulling off one of their greatest missions of all time, probably one of the defining moments of their lives for both the living and the dead, and that will be plugging up War Maria. As we know, War Maria was breached in the beginning episodes of the show, and now they're coming to take it back. But right now, the scouts are cornered. They're cornered by this trap set by the Beast Titan, as they have now surrounded the perimeter of the town, and now humanity is losing their horses, their morale, and their numbers in terms of troops. The Ace himself, the Titan Shifter, humanity's trump card, Eren Jaeger, is engaged in a fight with Berthold and Reiner at the moment, so he can't simply just ram down everyone else and all these other titans. And even if we take our greatest strategist, Armin, and also one of humanity's probably greatest fighters and our main female protagonist, Mikasa, she's also engaged in battle. We have people like Hanji, etc., who we are unsure as to whether they're dead or alive. That goes for many scouts, in fact. So now we're only left with Levi, Erwin, and the only soldiers that remain. Where do we go from here? We're at a dead end. We're literally with our backs against the wall. So how do we defeat these titans? Or do we simply just die and mean nothing? And that is where Erwin's speech comes in. And Erwin's speech changes everything from this point. So let's get into the speech, actually. So the way I like to see this is that I think that Erwin comes across as a fatalist. He encourages or is open to the fact that death is almost imminent. There is no way that they aren't going to have to at least sacrifice something. All lives are going to be lost, and he embraces that in open arms. And I think his thinking comes across almost as paradoxical, and that's mostly because he believes in the fact that life is pretty much meaningless to some extent, and he means that in the context of his own men. And when I say men, I mean the scouts overall. And I will just quote this from Erwin himself. "It's all meaningless. No matter what hopes and dreams you had, no matter how blessed a life you've lived, it's all the same if you're shredded by rocks. Everybody will die one day." And as you can see, that's pretty dark. You would expect someone who, of which is the leader of an army, to sort of say, "die fighting," or, which is even said in the episode, say something like "die fighting," or at least "go out there and do your best." But no, he doesn't see it like that. He sees it in the way that death is right in front of them, and we have to, without a choice, run right into it. Although it will mean nothing, we have to do it anyway. And from those words alone, already I was thinking, there's no hope, they're all dead. And sadly enough, yes, they did die. But there is more to this story that I think really changes everything. I think Erwin's view is more than just, this is this and this is that. Erwin decides to level the playing field in the way that each and every soldier has the same amount of meaning, if you will. And we'll come back to the term meaning, which is very important in his philosophical view of things, very shortly. But he decides to sort of give everyone an equal number. Everyone has one value, and that is simply almost the same as dead. They're all just simply pawns in this larger scheme of things. They're all disposable, they can all be disposed of, and they will eventually dispose of themselves. So from that part, the speech overall is pretty frank that Erwin thinks that life means nothing. And that doesn't come relative to each soldier and how strong they are versus these titans, whether it's Levi, whether it's Eren, whether it's anybody. Everybody is the same. But wait, there's more. Yes, there is more to this, and although that sounds awfully fatalistic, I think Erwin brings it back with his second part of his speech, and that is this sort of Mobius loop that I like to think of, and that is the whole idea of transferring value and meaning from one soldier or one group of people to another, and that goes both ways, and that's why I call it a Mobius loop. It's the whole idea that the meaning of the dead is transferred to the living who decide to strive on, and those that are dead are given meaning by having people live on for them, and those who are living create meaning for those who have fallen. They only obtain meaningful lives as a result of people going on and living their so-called legacy for them. Similarly to Erwin's past, which we get exposed to a lot more in season 3 part 1, it really relates to how Erwin feels in the way of finding the truth. But Erwin decides to acknowledge the fact that in order to find the truth, or to uncover the secrets behind his father and everything of which happened, he must let that live on within the people of which he entrusts. And the people which he entrusts are his fellow scouts on the other side of the wall, as well as Levi, for example. He knows those people can live on and create meaning for him, and therefore that sacrifice, that inevitable sacrifice, let's remember that, the inevitable sacrifice must be made to almost up the stakes of their lives, and they should therefore go on and find the truth, of which we see partially within the basement episode. So quickly, just to recap the whole value transference or meaning transference, I think meaning's a better word, as Erwin used that term himself in the translation. Again, take translations with a slight grain of salt, but get the overall message. So it could be value, it could be meaning, it's pretty much the same thing. Again, philosophically, that might not be the case, but in this case, let's assume they are the same. Overall, it's pretty much meaning is created for the dead through people living, and meaning is created through the living through the dead. Erwin decides to challenge that whole idea by raising that whole rhetorical question to one of our fellow soldiers and saying that, no, our soldiers did not die out of vain. They did not die for nothing. Are their lives meaningless? Of course they're not. They mean something. And that's because we go on and we strive forward. We strive to succeed. And even these sacrifices add meaning to them. And they add meaning to our greatest soldiers of humanity, whether that's Eren Yeager, whether that's Levi Ackerman, whoever that is, it goes to them, and therefore they must avenge us. So now that we're mostly done with most of the philosophy stuff, I think that was just really insightful. I really wanted to get that out. So now let's actually talk about something a bit more lighthearted, and that is my favorite part of the show, and now I'm trying, yes, I said in the first episode, you can quote me, the whole Link the VA thing. I did in episode 2 as well. Check those out if you like voice acting quite a lot. I decided to do this thing where I link the voice actors of one character which we're looking at in an anime that we're talking about in the episode or the respective episode, and then link that to another anime's character and kind of just look at the differences. I do it blind, so it's quite interesting because I don't know until I'm researching the episode. So when I find out, it's actually quite a shock. This is my favorite part of the show. That is the Link the VA segment. So this week we're looking at voice actor Daisuke Ono. Daisuke Ono, of course, voice acts Erwin in Shingeki no Kyojin, Attack on Titan, and I decided to, of course, go on Mal, check the list for voice acting roles as I do each week, and I'm actually kind of shocked. The first one is really cool, and that is none other than the legend himself, Jotaro Kujo. The Joe Bro himself, Jotaro. Like, I don't think there's much I need to say beyond it's Jotaro. Erwin is Jotaro, guys. The same voice that gave you Jotaro is the same guy that allowed this amazingly philosophical speech. And yeah, I don't think there's much more to say than Jotaro is leading an army and he's leading Joe Bros as well. So, like, good for them. The second role is actually kind of ironic. And this one is Riki Nendo from Sakikuzo. If you don't know, Sakikuzo is pretty much a comedy anime about this psychic boy who has pretty much almost every psychic power you can think of. And it's pretty much his amazingly unlucky life with his friends. His quote-unquote friends, actually. Because I don't know if he truly considers them friends at times. But yeah, Sakikuzo, great anime. You should see it. But he actually voice acts Ricky from the show. And if you don't know, Ricky is a really dumb character. I don't think there's any way of saying that differently. He's straight up dumb, apart from a few moments where he has some weird insights that apparently work. Again, I'll let you watch the anime to decide that. Ricky is the same guy, of course, who let out this amazing speech. And just putting the two together in my head, it's so weird, because when you think of someone that often just says pointless things, keeps a hamster in his pocket after his old one died, and then just did all these other bits of nonsense. And this is the same guy that has this fatalistic approach of life. It kinda doesn't add up, but that's the fun of this segment. So that is going to do it for this week's Link the VA segment. And of course, if you have opinions and insights on these, be sure to contact the show. That is getinthemecha@gmail.com. That is getinthemecha@gmail.com. Send in a message and I might actually read it on the show. I'm going to try and read about one or two each week. But back to Attack on Titan. One thing that I think is really important that we understand and take from Erwin's philosophy, apart from the fact that Jotaro is also one of the mirroring characters of Erwin, let's put that aside now. One of the things that I think is really important is the fact that this philosophy stands for the entire show. It doesn't only apply with the stuff to do with the Beast Titan, the Shiganshima arc in general, the fighters on the other side of the war with Berthold and Reiner. It stands for literally everything. When I thought this deeply, the first thing that came to mind was some of the deaths that occurred really early and unexpectedly in season one. And one of them, namely being some of the old Levi Squad members, and namely Petra. And just some of those deaths that you feel shouldn't have happened, you can arguably perceive that they had meaning in themselves because they backed or egged on people like Eren and Levi, etc., who were running away from the female titan at that part because their lives, their meaning was on the shoulders of these new soldiers because their lives, in order for their lives to obtain meaning, it relied on people such as Eren and Levi to strive on and keep going and accomplish their mission of plugging up the war, baiting the female titan, etc. So I think that is really powerful. That applies to people such as Hans as well. That sacrifice still is on the shoulders of people such as Mikasa, Eren, and Armin. So I think when you think of it from that view, this resonates completely across everything. And one of the things that I think is really cool about Attack on Titan is the fact that it really makes setups for the long term. Hopefully I'll talk about this when I do reviews and analyses for other parts of the season, different arcs, etc. But one thing that I think is really, really smart is the fact that it tries to plan for the long term. With something like Erwin's speech, this resonates across the entire show, similarly to how the political setups in season 3 part 1 were good for setting up not only this season, but some arcs afterwards. I have a bit of manga insight, so that makes more sense. I won't go too into that. But overall, just some things are able to resonate across the entire show. I think sometimes that comes at somewhat of a cost, because personally, again, Attack on Titan fans, don't kill me for this. But, what I would say is that sometimes I feel like some of the setups, like the political setups in the first part of the season, kind of felt a bit pointless at first, but when you realize what they truly mean later on, that's when the relevance comes in, and it kind of all prepares for this large endgame setup. It stocks up everything that it needs, and then it throws it right at you way later down the line. Another example, of course, would be the Beast Titan setup, with the whole introduction of the Beast Titan in Season 2 not doing anything crazy interesting or crazy as he is now in the Shiganshima arc, but just that simple introduction to Zeke, I think, is a big move in itself, and that slowly builds across. Now we're here in Season 3 Part 2, that was years ago when we had Season 2, but they threw him in right at this moment, and I think that's really tactical. It tries to build upon earlier concepts, and then bang, it hits it on you. And since we've had all that time for development and thinking, and putting narrative points together, eventually it becomes something that's really special in the moment because the stakes are higher as we know these characters or we're familiar with these setups for longer. So just to round up when it comes to the whole long-term setup thing, I just think to make it specific to this part of the show, It's just the fact that every little thing that has occurred to this moment matters. And that's also expressed in the opening as well, which I will analyze. And I think that's really important because everything is meant for this moment. Everything that they've been teasing, everything that they've been throwing out, if you take the key in the first season opening, but when I mean first season, I mean first part of the third season. If you take that, if you take the whole setup with Bertolt and Reiner, of course, it sounds obvious, but that's a needed component. They didn't wait for that reveal until season two. If you take the whole stuff with the key, I said that, the stuff with the basement, the whole stuff with Shiganshima, just the existence and knowledge of Shiganshima and everything that occurred in the Battle of the Trost District arc, everything has come together. And such philosophies actually, not even just in terms of meaning, but just add value and richness to characters such as Eren, Armin, Mikasa, Levi, etc. Because those same people, oh yeah, don't forget Hanj, don't think I forgot Hanj, you guys. Yes, people like that now have greater relevance, as of course they were always relevant, but now it feels as if everything is riding on them now. So as a viewer, it feels as if we're egging them on. We've always been egging them on, but now the stakes are higher than ever, and they have to go out there and defend humanity, as there aren't many of them left, and humanity is running low versus Titans, as it seems. So now our greatest defenders have more of a reason and greater stakes when it comes to defending humanity overall. Lastly, I just want to say that I think the return to Shiganshima has probably been the greatest arc of the show, and things such as Erwin's speech, which we looked at today, the opening, which I'd love to look at, and all these other setups have really made this show special. And although I might not agree with the Mal rating, again, Attack on Titan fans, I'm sorry, I know you love your show, but I might not agree with a 9.1 Mal rating as of now. This is being recorded in June. Remember that. So the show's not finished yet. But although I might not agree with that rating, I can definitely say that in terms of emotion and philosophy, this show has just stepped up to another level. I think the show had different themes and still does have loads of different themes going on in different seasons. If we take part one of season three, we get a lot to do with politics and the whole royalist dissension sort of theme going on. If we take the first season, I think that was very centric around horror and also just the historical aspect in regards to humanity's survival and how everything just occurred in a set chain of events. It was pretty much following the life of Eren Yeager from a child to now a fully fledged member of the military. And I think now we have this theme. This philosophical theme has probably been one of my favorite themes in this show. It's really stood out from, if you take other shows and also just other seasons, it's made its landmark. And that is just the idea of heading straight on. As said in the other episodes, we must become the devil. And that stuck with me because now we're sort of assuming what I assume to be a bit more of a negative role. We're heading straight in for the horns. We're heading straight in to the darkness. And because there are so little of us left, no one can stop us pretty much apart from our biggest enemy, the Titans. But nothing can stop us from obtaining the truth. And now our greatest members of humanity, or our greatest defenders of humanity, must seek that out. Thank you so much for listening to this fifth episode of the Gets in the Mecha podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. It actually took me a lot of thinking to sort of plan this episode out. I don't script things, but I actually had to do a decent amount of writing just to get my head around the entire philosophy, as it is slightly complicated. It's definitely more on the complicated side because you have to think of it from both sides. But without any more complications, I hope you enjoyed the episode overall. As always, updates on Twitter, at Gets in the Mecha. If you want to contact the show, that is getinthemecha@gmail.com. Show notes as well. I have all these details and sources within the show notes, so you don't have to worry about looking for all of these things in the speech I'll definitely try to do the opening analysis for this season. I really loved it. I'd love to contrast it to Red Swan as well. And finally, of course, if you want to support the show, consider leaving a review. A review gives me feedback in regards to how I can improve, tells me what you like and what you don't like about the show. But thank you for listening. Have a great day. Check out the previous episode if you haven't already. And goodbye. The music in this production goes as follows. Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming. Mandatory Overtime by Joth. The sound effects in today's production goes as follows. Sound effects from Subspace Audio and the cinematic drums sound effect from Alexander under Orange Free Sounds.